This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. DC 37 is New York City's largest public employee union. We've got 125,000 members and nearly 50,000 retirees. We are part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We're on Sundays at 8 p.m. We rebroadcast on Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. We're also available as a podcast. Simply go to the podcast app on your smartphone or tablet and search for DC 37 State of the Union. You can check out our website, www.dc37.net. Follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you have any comments about our show, or if you're a DC 37 member who belongs to a community group or a church group and wants to promote a community event, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. Donald Trump recently unveiled his proposed budget for 2020. It's going to be painful for the middle class and working class. And joining us by phone to talk about it is AFSCME's Director of Research and Bargaining, Steve Kreisberg. Welcome back to the show, Stephen.
Thank you, Chris. It's always a pleasure to talk with you and my friends up in New York City at DC 37.
Well, before we talk about the budget, let's talk about the tax overhaul that was passed by the Republican Congress last year. Who won in the tax overhaul and who lost?
Well, I think we know the answer. Results are in. The winners are the top 1% who actually got over 80% of the benefits from the tax act over the next 10 years. There, you know, so those are the winners, very clearly. No one actually lost per se in the tax cuts, but as we see, a Republican president and Congress, or at least the Senate side, trying to now engage in some budget-cutting exercises. They, again, are disproportionately focusing on cutting those things that benefit workers and the middle class. So that's how we're going to pay for this tax cut.
And that's and we're talking about trillions of dollars, aren't we?
We are talking about trillions of dollars. Tax cut was $1.5 trillion. And, of course, the corporate tax cuts were permanent, but the tax cuts, such as they were, which were very limited for the middle class, they expire in a couple of years. Pretty cynical move on the part of those who supported the tax act, but not surprising. This is the kind of budget gimmicks they've played with time and time again. And ultimately, we're not seeing the kind of growth that we were promised. Remember, the president promised that through this tax act, there'd be, you know, substantially more investment by corporations. That hasn't happened. He promised that we would be creating millions of jobs. That hasn't happened. So I think those of us who were skeptical of these claims have turned out to be right, and maybe not really a surprise to most people who follow things, Trump was wrong.
And when the president was Obama, folks like Mitch McConnell were talking very much about the deficit and the spending and the runaway spending and the runaway deficit, and that doesn't seem to matter that much now, does it?
Well, it didn't seem to matter when they adopted the tax cuts, right? And the biggest phony of them all is that Paul Ryan, and thankfully he's gone. But these guys talk a good game about budget cuts and the need to have a balanced budget, but no tax cut should ever be refused in their minds. So they took the tax cuts. And part of their strategy, of course, is to reduce taxes and then the next year or the year after come back and say, well, now we have to cut the budget. Now we have to cut Social Security. Now we have to cut Medicaid and Medicare. That is their tactic. I mean, none of this should come as a surprise. These are the folks who did the same exact thing after the Bush tax cuts in 2001. As you may remember, President Bush had a significant reduction in taxes, and the Republicans in Congress and the administration, the Bush administration, then argued very much for reductions in services to workers and middle-class taxpayers, as well as running up the score when they the budget score, if you will, when by engaging in wars in Afghanistan and Iraq.
How now, all these budget cuts originating in Washington, proposed budget cuts, would affect New Yorkers, and it would affect the public services system, and it would affect the way government operates. Where are the cuts, and what's what do we have to fight here?
Yeah, well, first another preliminary matter on the tax cuts. So not only were the proponents of these tax cuts cynical about the effect it may have on a budget, but they were cynical in the application and the development of the policy. They very specifically targeted states like New York and Connecticut and New Jersey and California, states that have robust public services, for a disproportionately unfair elimination of a federal tax deduction. And this is the tax deduction that we get for payment of state and local taxes. So New York has a relatively higher state income tax. And now, under the new law, the deduction that you get on your federal returns for paying that state income tax is capped. It's capped at $10,000 a year. So the accumulation of your property tax and your income tax and any other local taxes you may have at a county or city level, that accumulation, if it's above $10,000, you can only deduct $10,000 from your federal returns.
So in this tale of two countries, they actually targeted states that have, as you say, robust public services, but also vote a certain way in elections.
Yeah, well, they very plainly, I mean, a number of Republican senators were gleeful, were boasting about how they're sticking it to the blue states. And that's the phrase that they used. You know, those clowns like Lindsey Graham, that's right. What they were saying.
Right.
So this was a deliberate strategy. This isn't an unintended consequence. This is the plan, right? This is what they're trying to do. They were gleeful about it. As our politics have gotten more polarized, we've now seen repercussions that we've never seen before, right? We've now seen, and Trump has done it with disaster relief. I mean, to divert topics for a moment, right? He claimed, you know, he was going to pull money out of California's disaster relief for the tremendous fires that they had, as punishment for being in California and not being sufficiently pro-Trump. He wants to, and in some cases, he's even said he wants to use that money to pay for the border wall. So this is cynical. This is, in a sense, undemocratic, right?
Right, right.
And you can even argue it's un-American, in terms of the norms that we've always had. The norm being that we believe that we're one country. This is dangerous politics, and where does it end? I'm not sure, because Democrats are going to have to stand up and respond. You can't just acquiesce to this kind of unfairness.
But he's talking about, and explain this, please, to me, because when we talk about block grants, and I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but there is a cut that looks to be about $1 trillion in Medicare and Medicaid, but they're talking about replacing that with block grants to the states. That's their defense of this, as I understand it.
Yeah, yeah. So let's get into some of the weeds here.
Okay,
and Trump's budget, and really this is, you know, it's full of gimmicks, right? So he wants to, they want to fulfill their lie that they're going to balance the budget and offset the revenue draining effects of the tax cuts. So they come up with all this stuff. I mean, one of my favorite things that they do in this budget, just to prove the point, favorite in the sense of proving the point, is they, in the budget, they would propose to eliminate the Affordable Care Act. Okay.
Right.
In that same budget, they rely on the taxes that are embedded in the Affordable Care Act to help balance the budget. So they're firmly on both sides of the question. Right. If we don't have an Affordable Care Act, then you don't have the taxes associated with the act, and you can't include the taxes in your revenues. But of course, they do.
That makes no sense on its face. I mean,
well, think about who the president is.
Right. Okay.
And the other thing, but here's the good news. Right. Let me give you the good news first before I give you all the bad news.
Okay.
The good news is this budget ain't ever going to get adopted.
Well, there you go.
Okay, so there's the good news. But I think what we need to why it's important to discuss it is because it is a reflection of the president's priorities, and we have to, and we're entitled to know, what does this president stand for? What does any president stand for? Whether it be Obama, whether it be Trump, regardless of who you may favor for the 2020 election, we need to know where these people stand. And Trump has told us where they stand. So, getting into the weeds,
yep.
Between Medicare and Medicaid, they propose to cut over the next 10 years almost $1.6 trillion out of those healthcare programs. $1.6 trillion. In the case of Medicaid, getting into your block grants that you discussed, they want to transform the program from one in which employees, recipients, beneficiaries, are entitled to a Medicaid benefit, to health care, to one where they will give the states a block grant to provide the health care. And if the states don't have enough money, what are they going to wind up doing? They're going to reduce services to those who need health care. So the idea here is to give the states a block grant that doesn't grow at the same pace as health care expenditures, as a way to squeeze down the Medicaid program.
But that
that's how you save $800 billion in that program.
And that money, but that money does have to be spent on health care? Because I get this feeling that block grants somehow get played with.
No. Well, some block grants do. But no, this would not be just a chunk of money, go do whatever you want with it.
Right, okay.
It would be a chunk of money and go give health care to those who qualify for Medicaid. So you'd still have that. But the growth in the expenditures for Medicaid would be squeezed down to unreasonable levels because the block grant would not grow in accordance with the needs of the population.
Okay.
And that's really the scheme. In Medicare, they're projecting to take about $850 billion out of the program over the next 10 years. Now, remember, this is the candidate who said, "I will not touch Medicare."
Right.
He said, almost a quote was, "You can't cut Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security." Right? We can save Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security without cuts. And then he would wait for the applause and he would say, "Have to do it."
Right.
Right? And then get more applause. And people would be waving their hats around and, "Oh, it was such fun to watch." Right? Well, now the chickens have kind of come home to roost, to use the tired old cliche. And we're seeing that, guess what? The guy lied.
Right.
And we know he lied because his lips were moving.
Let me stop you for a second. We're talking with AFSCME's Director of Research and Bargaining, Steve Kreisberg. We've got about 3 minutes left. So let's talk about, in the last 3 minutes, what the impact of the Trump administration has been on working men and women in this country.
Well, it certainly has not been good, right? I mean, the good news is the economy was creating a couple 100,000 jobs a month during President Obama, his final years in office, and that has mostly continued. Actually, job growth has decelerated. In other words, we're not creating as many jobs as we were in the last few years of the Obama administration. But to be honest, some of that could be explained by the fact that, you know, the recovery is maturing, right?
Right.
But the good news is we're still creating jobs. The bad news is we're not creating good jobs. We're also not saving all those manufacturing jobs that the president, when he was a candidate, you know, said he would save. I mean, we all know about the closing of the General Motors plants in Lordstown, Ohio, which has gotten a lot of press over the last week. That's just one plant, right? And there's all the manufacturing facilities that supply parts for that. So there are thousands of jobs at stake. And these are greater forces than just what the United States can do on its own. But unfortunately, the tax bill, we all come back to the tax bill again, actually promotes and certainly does not penalize foreign manufacturing. So it actually promotes offshoring because of some of the way corporate taxes are treated. So that is one of the ironies. I don't know if Trump even realizes this himself, but they passed a bill that that tends to encourage outsourcing. So workers are not faring well in the manufacturing industries. We're not faring well in income. Our income is not growing at the same pace as the economy over the last decades, and that really has not changed over the last 2 years.
And his Labor Department is not helping workers very much either. They're reversing all the things that Obama did to protect workers.
Right. One of the things that Obama did was to make 4 million more workers eligible for overtime. The administration rescinded that rule and replaced it with a rule that would make only 1 million more workers eligible for overtime. So we're updating a regulation from 2004 for the overtime threshold, long since overdue, 15 years now, and the update from Trump's Department of Labor is inadequate. They have suspended the implementation of certain safety and health rules, which were important. They're not pursuing implementation of fiduciary rules, which would require financial advisors to act in the best interest of their clients instead of the best interest of themselves. These are common sense things that Obama put into place, and Trump has reversed them.
Steve Kreisberg is the AFSCME Director of Research and Bargaining. I knew 15 minutes would fly by, and they did. Thank you very much for helping explain this mess to us. But you do say that we're not going to get caught up in, this is not going to fly at the end of the day.
Right. The budget's dead on arrival, as they say. So there's good news there. But again, if we don't stay engaged and on top of this, we could wind up in a very, very bad situation.
Steve Kreisberg, thank you very much. And we'll be right back.
You're welcome, Chris. Good to hear from you again.
Okay. Take care, my friend.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care.
We're back. This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. If you have any comments about this show or you have an event that you would like us to promote, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. The New York State AFL-CIO just launched a new podcast called Union Strong. It debuted on March 11th. And with us now to talk about it is New York State AFL-CIO President Mario Salento. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Chris, thank you for having me. I always appreciate coming on.
It's always great to have you to talk about what's going on in the state. I just wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about the new podcast and communication with the public. So talk about the how did this come about, and what are you trying to do with this?
Well, I'll tell you something, Chris. It's interesting. You know, we have density in this state, right? You know, we have 2.5 million members. There are 3,000 local unions that are under the umbrella of the New York State AFL-CIO.
Wow.
We represent 24% of the workforce, which is twice the national average. One out of every 7 union members in the country comes from the state of New York. Now, these are great numbers, right? Things that we can all be proud of. But here's the thing. Those numbers in and of themselves are useless and meaningless unless all of us in this movement are working off of the same page, working out of the same playbook, coordinating what we're doing, public sector unions, private sector unions, building trades, upstate, midstate, downstate, Buffalo to Brooklyn to Long Island and everywhere in between. Just coordinating, right? Coordinating our messages, making sure that we're on the same page when we're talking about issues and when we're advocating for our issues. And what we recognize is this, that when we are on the same page, we do a pretty good job of getting our message heard. You and I have talked about the Constitutional Convention and the 83-17 victory that
right.
we had when everyone was on the same page.
Well, right.
we wanted to take a page from that. We want to be able to build off of that momentum. And I think, from a state AFL-CIO's perspective, we'd be derelict in our duties if we didn't try to build off of that feeling of true unity and shared sense of purpose coming out of that tremendous victory. So we recognize that we have to always be in step, or at least attempt to be in step, with our members and how they're getting information. And we recognized a few things. We recognize that 1 in 4 Americans now listens to a podcast on a monthly basis. Not something that I grew up with in the 70s and 80s, right?
That's
did not exist.
That's right.
We know that this gives us one more communication tool to reach out to our members, and not only our members, but a broader audience, just to educate people about the value of unions and making them understand that this is who we are, this is what we do. When we say AFL-CIO, this is what it means, this is what we believe in, and more importantly, why. And the issues that we fight for don't only further the lives and improve the lives of our members, but we try to raise the standard of living and the quality of life for all working people. And a lot of people may not realize that. You know, when the labor movement, Chris, leads the fight as we did for a $15 minimum wage or paid family leave, or we raised unemployment insurance benefits for the first time in 14 years, or we passed Buy American legislation, the labor movement leads each and every one of those fights. No one would dispute that. But here's the thing. When the language is written into the bill and the bill is signed into law by the governor, in each and every one of those bills, the language doesn't say, well, we're going to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour, but only for union members.
Right. That's
right. Or
we're
going to institute paid family leave, but only for union members. You can't do that, by the way.
Right. That's right.
So it applies to everyone. And what we're trying to do here is first educate our members, certainly, but secondarily make the general public aware of who it is and what it is that we're fighting for and how, when the labor movement is strong, we raise all boats. And I think that's really important. A lot of people hear unions, they hear labor, they hear AFL-CIO. Either they don't know what it means or they're not sure. And what we're trying to do, as we did with the Constitutional Convention, is just make people aware of the fact that, look, we are here for a purpose. You can agree with us or not agree with us. Here are the facts. Here's what we believe in. And if you believe in what we believe in, we have a shared sense of purpose, then come be part of this. Either it's if you have the opportunity to join a union, fine. Great, we welcome you. And if you don't, and you share our point of view, then join us in each and every one of these causes.
Right.
That's what we're trying to get out here. And I think a podcast now makes the most sense in the next progression of communication tools to get in touch with everyone in the general public.
The podcast is called Union Strong. Now, how do we access this?
Well, you can get it anywhere where you currently listen to a podcast. That's anything including iTunes. You can also get it on our website, nysaflcio.org. But in any capacity where you can listen to a podcast, we are there. You just click on Union Strong.
You know, I remember I worked for AFSCME in Washington in 2008. I remember going to Washington, and the public opinion favorables for unions was at like 43%. Mm. And last summer they came out with a number, Gallup came out with a number that was 62%,
yes.
I believe. And I totally agree with you that communication, I remember trying to explain to local presidents at AFSCME back in 2008 what a Facebook was.
Mm.
And what we've accomplished in the 10 years since, 11 years since, in terms of just talking to the world. And
right.
I really believe that these communications tools, which it took us a while to get to, I think, right?
Right.
I mean, it took us a while to, and people weren't even, some folks weren't even talking to their own members very well. But when you take down the curtain, I think you'll agree that people understand who we are when they know who we are.
Right.
And so as we move forward, and you're, you know, you've got an excellent sense of communications and the need to communicate. We have gotten better, haven't we?
Oh, no, we certainly have. And again, you can take a look at it in various campaigns. You look at the political campaigns last year and we talked to our members. We recognized during the Constitutional Convention campaign one very simple truth, and that is we have to speak with our members, not at them.
Right, absolutely.
And that means you engage them in discussion. You listen to them. You find out, well, what is important to you? Because I can portray something, Chris, as being important to a working person, and it may or may not register. You know, I can talk about, well, you're going to get better wages. Okay, that's great. But if you break it down and you say, you know, it's this amount of money this week, and that's extra money each month, and that extra money will help you pay for your rent, to pay for your children's clothing and keep, you know, and shelter, and you break it down in that way. And then you talk about, well, what about paid family leave? Well, what does that mean? That's a pretty broad topic, right? Well,
right.
Well, paid family leave, that means if you have a newborn child, you'll be able to be home with that
right,
child.
Right.
You have a parent who gets sick, you'll be able to spend time with your parents. And you break it down and you listen to what under those umbrellas are exactly important to our members. And then you get it, and then you sort of feed it back to them and say, okay, you told us this was important. Well, here's how we break it down, and this is how it helps. So speaking with them, not at them, is I think, vitally important. I think we've learned that now over the years. And what we saw at the convention, the Constitutional Convention, was that when we do that, you engage people. So now they're not only listening to what we're saying, they're actually acting upon it. So whether it was the political campaigns last year and the state Senate and all the statewide races where Labor's candidates overwhelmingly won almost every race that we had a unified endorsement, then going back to the Constitutional Convention and other things. So you'll see it. You'll see it in legislative campaigns where we fought for a minimum wage, we fought for paid family leave, we fought for Buy American legislation, we fought to pass legislation, which DC 37 was integral to last year, to help us pass legislation to mitigate the damage from the Janus case. You see now that our members are vocal. They're more active. And that comes back to my original point, which is it's great to have 2.5 million members and 3,000 local unions, but if we're not all using that energy, if we're not using those numbers to our advantage, it doesn't mean anything because the other side will always outspend us. Our opponents and our adversaries will outspend us 10-1 or 20-1 on legislative campaigns, political campaigns, advocacy campaigns. But what they don't have is the ability to talk to 2 million people, the ability to knock on doors, make phone calls, send out texts and emails, and speak directly to an audience of that size to get them activated. That's what scares them. That's what we have to make the most of. And that's what we're hoping that this podcast will help us in that cause.
Mario Salento is the president of the New York State AFL-CIO. The podcast is called Union Strong. You can get it wherever, you can get access to it wherever podcasts are sold. But this is free, right?
Yes, it is. It's free on iTunes and every other podcast accessibility.
Thank you very much for taking the time with us this evening, sir.
Chris, you've always been great. You're a good friend. Thanks for having me.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye. That's just about all the time we have this evening. Before we go, a couple of announcements. The Municipal Employees Legal Services holds workshops on wills, healthcare proxies, power of attorney privileges. That's all on Thursday, April 4th at 6 p.m. at Union Headquarters. To register and for details, call 212-815-1111. They also provide legal representation when you're applying for citizenship. For more information on that, call 212-815-1818. The DC 37 Labor and Faith Community Outreach holds a meeting on Wednesday, April 10th at 6 p.m. at Union Headquarters. For more information, call 212-815-1502. And the DC 37 Political Action Committee holds its monthly meeting Thursday, April 11th at 6 p.m. at Union Headquarters. For details, call 212-815-1502. Oh, remember, if you have any comments about this show, or if you're a DC 37 member and you belong to a community or church group and you want to promote an event, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. We always appreciate your feedback. I want to thank the guests this evening, AFSCME Director of Research and Bargaining Steve Kreisberg and New York State AFL-CIO President Mario Salento for joining us. The producer is Rudy Orozco. The engineer is Andrea Minocchio. I'm Chris Policano. Until next time, ciao.